PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 26 of THP's Off Course Podcast. I am your host, Dan Edwards, and we're doing something a little bit different and hopefully something we can do a little bit more of. We have wonderful friendships and relationships with folks in the community. We want to bring their experiences to you in our own unique off-course sort of way. With me today is the incredibly versatile, sort of THPTB famous, Michael Verska. His resume is long. He's been with a number of different well-known companies in the industry, now with Callaway Golf. You can find him on Twitter at VGolfman. Very, very social media friendly guy. You can also follow Off Course on social, on Twitter. Off Course THP is the handle, and myself at Canadan Golf. Michael, thank you so much for taking the time today. How are you?
I am great. That was quite the intro. Now I feel like I have to live up to something. So thank you for those many kind words.
Yeah, that's what we do here. We slide in quickly and then we celebrate basically for the entirety of the episode.
It'll be fun. If nothing else, we'll have some fun. Hopefully some people might enjoy it as well. So
I'd say you're fresh to California, but this move has, it's been quite some time now. We've had a pandemic in between. How are you finding the accommodations there in California?
So California is absolutely gorgeous. I'm sitting in my backyard for the few people who watch this rather than listen to it. And I'm maybe four blocks from the ocean. We're still renting because no one will take all of my money. And I've thrown an awful lot of money at many people with houses for sale. And we've come up the last two, we've literally come in second place, which second place in home buying gets you absolutely nothing. So that's good. But the place itself is wonderful. You know, the weather's always great. We love walking down to the beach. I haven't played nearly as much golf as I would have liked coming here, but that's much more pandemic and just being kind of family focused and home buying focused. But it's actually been 14 months in Cali, which is in some days it seems like 2 days, and sometimes it seems like 20 years when you factor COVID in.
That's hard to believe. And I actually had the opportunity to come down to California. I don't even know when that was, earlier this year, late last year. We got to sit down, break some bread together. And what that means is drink some drinks. I'm not a Coke Zero guy. I'm more of a cider guy or a rum and Coke guy. You are 100% on that Coke Zero train. And I appreciate that about you.
Yeah. I mean, and for full disclosure, I mean, I drink a lot of water. I drink a lot of Coke Zero. And then, I mean, other than that, it's like milk every once in a while, maybe a ginger ale. I don't drink alcohol, but yeah, the whole Coke Zero thing is not just some shtick. I personally keep them in business.
Yeah. Is it weird for you when you go to places like the PGA show where it's business all day, and then you get into that evening section and everyone kind of lets the hair down a little bit, you're mainlining that Coke Zero and things are getting a little bit heavy?
I've been this way my whole life, right? So I'm kind of used to it. You know, I mean, going back to college days, you know, being the only person sober within a three block radius is was not uncommon. And so, you know, I've been around that. And you know, the good news is you know, hopefully, you know, I hang around with a lot of wonderful people, and yes, they drink. Sometimes they drink more than they should, but they're good people. And, you know, whatever their choices are, my choices might be a little different, but I, you know, certainly don't judge them. And I'm going to keep down in Coke Zeros, and they can do what they want to do, and we'll keep having fun.
You know, I think one of my favorite experiences from the show is getting into that pit. And I wonder how much fun I could have. And I look back at this so fondly, thinking of being surrounded by guys like you and Sean Toulon and Luke over there, Williams. And they've got, you know, they've got their own versions of what's awesome, what's exciting. It definitely isn't Coke Zero in a couple of their drinks. But I look at those experiences, and it's really fun for me to experience the industry at that next level. It's not just about equipment talk, although it does get sprinkled in when Luke tells me I have to play a mallet. I still think he's nuts. And that kind of brings me to one of the first topics I wanted to speak to you about tonight. You've spent time around the country now in your work. I believe you've been in the industry over two decades at this point.
21 plus, actually crossed 21 years. My first day in the industry was July 5th, 1999. So I'm a little over 21 years now.
Okay. And so you spent time in Texas, in Indiana, but mostly Chicago, and now in California. Am I missing anywhere?
I was born in Arkansas, but it doesn't really count. Wasn't quite in the industry from ages zero to three. So yeah, we're good.
Okay. So one of the things I thought was interesting, and this stems from Tiger's experience at Payne's Valley for the Payne's Valley Cup. They talked about that course, which was absolutely stunning to look at, cherishing the idea of it being a public course, open to the public. And when I heard the price, which is over $200, being from Ohio, you think a public course, you definitely don't, you don't put the perspective on $200. You think more in that like 30 to 70 range. And when you're in 70, then most of your friends say, no, I'm busy that day. So in your case, I think you've gone now to a place where I doubt the price is down. I would imagine it's the most expensive public you've played. When someone says something like that to you, where it's open to the public, but it's over $200, how does that make you feel as a golfer?
Well, I mean, I just to give some background. I mean, I was really the first person in my family to play golf, and I came up from, you know, I think saying that my upbringing was middle class would be, you know, generous, I think, in many degrees. So I am far from a country club kid. Now, you know, I've been pretty lucky many times in my life to be a member of a country club, but you know, I'm a public golfer in general, you know, and it's definitely that way. And, it, you know, California, it's interesting, you know, kind of the average rate for a weekend here is kind of that, you know, it starts at $85 for anything you'd even really want to play. And then it goes up from there. And, you know, you don't really get to 200 around here, but you can easily get to, you know, 150, 160. There's the wonderful exception of Goat Hill Park, which I wander over to many times, which is exceptionally reasonable for the fun layout and fun time you have there. But, you know, again, growing up a Midwest kid, you know, even I won't say all the way back when I was a teenager because prices have changed, but you know, even when I go back and, you know, visit my in-laws and things, you know, it's still kind of that 35, 40 bucks is public golf. And you get, even up in Chicago, you know, it's kind of that $50 up to, you know, you can spend 150 at some of the, you know, elite, but $200 is a, you know, that I don't want to say it's a bucket list course, but you know, it needs to be something truly special, in my thoughts to justify it. You know, you talk about, you know, elite public courses, places that, you know, I've been blessed to play, Spyglass, Pebble Beach, Kiawa, some of those that are, you know, real big dollars, you know, TPC Sawgrass is public, but you know, you're not walking on there for 150 bucks as well. So
I heard the number recently for Pebble and it definitely made me cringe. Now I'm obviously jealous and I've played it on Tiger Woods golf, so the urge to go is ever increasing, but yeah, at that price, I don't know. I could probably fly to Arkansas, play for the entire weekend and get back at the same price to play Pebble.
Yeah. I mean, again, I've been very blessed to be able to do that. But I would say, you know, if you're a golfer, somebody like you, Dan, you know, getting to play Pebble is really worth it one time, you know, and it's probably, you know, unless you're willing to just show up in the morning and sit and hopefully an opening, and, you know, yet it requires an overnight stay at the lodge or one of the other ones. So you're talking, you know, most likely in excess of $1,000 all in to play one round of golf, which is hard to justify and hard to swallow. But from someone who's, again, been very lucky and blessed to be able to play it, if you're a golf nerd and a golf diehard and this is in your blood, and, you know, it is for me, and I know it is for you and many listeners, you know, I can make a pretty good argument that it's worth it one time to save your pennies and, you know, work on your game and get excited and then, you know, get to experience the Monterey Peninsula is truly special. But yeah, just to go down to your local Muni and throw down $200 would be more than hard to swallow.
Well, I'm sold. I'm down anytime you want to go. So
I'm free next Thursday.
There you go. Yeah, that's going to be a hard sell. So when it comes to traveling for golf, is that something you've done before? Have you made the trip up to places like Whistling or Bandon or even gone overseas?
So most of it's work golf. I mean, that's one of the, you know, true, you know, first world problems I have. I have got to travel for golf, but most of the time it's been around something work related. I've been to Bandon. Bandon is tough to beat for the dollar value. Again, not cheap, but, you know, for the replay rounds in the afternoon, because of the views and I love Lynx golf. I mean, to me, there's even, you know, growing up in the Midwest and, you know, mostly tree line, but I love Lynx and Lynx style golf course. Bandon's incredible. It's interesting. I've been up north in Wisconsin several times, but I have never played any of the Whistling events. I've been there for other things, but never actually, excuse me, not events, courses, but never actually played those myself. I've been pretty fortunate to play Mammoth and some of the other, ones around Wisconsin that are incredible as well, but have not played Whistling. But yeah, I mean, you look at destination places, Stream Song down in Florida. I've really enjoyed the courses there. Bandon, from a kind of semi-reasonable price point, is, in my belief, unbeatable. I mean, it is the premier place. Now if you talk about just crazy money, Spy and Pebble, in my opinion, are, two of the five best golf courses you could find anywhere on earth. So, but again, you're talking real, both life-changing experiences and life-changing debt to play there. So,
right. Sure. So when it comes to Chicago, cause you did spend quite a bit of time there. Is there a place in that area that you would say is a preferred golf course? If someone were to go to Chicago and say, where am I playing? Can't miss golf.
Well, there's not, and I know some, as soon as I'm going to say this, some people will rattle off a bunch of courses, but Chicago is really a private golf central place. If you look at most of the really top courses, they're mostly private. It's, a lot of old school stuff. So, from a public standpoint, I love Highlands of Elgin. Again, I wouldn't call it a true link style golf course because it's the middle of nowhere, but the routing there, the way they work the holes around, the little bit of elevation change they have this quarry. So, from a public standpoint, I mean, Highlands of Elgin is A1 in my book. Now there's lots of other, good courses, but again, for the quality of the layout, and I don't remember what the dollar value is right now, and my fingers aren't fast enough to find it online, but it's pretty darn reasonable as well. Just for Chicago, it's for the quality of the course, it's pretty darn reasonable, period. So that's my go-to when people say they're heading to Chicago, and I realize Elgin is not in Chicago. It's probably, an hour drive from downtown, but if we're counting greater suburbs, I'm throwing it in there.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. It is actually one of my favorite places up there and a place where we've held a THP event before. So I definitely know what you're speaking about. They built it into that old quarry, which, I mean, it's cool that you can see so many holes from certain areas. It's definitely a unique perspective on the game where a lot of these places have each hole is its own unique one, and you might be able to see one or two other holes from it. In this case, you can see just about everything, and it's different.
Yeah, you'll forget you're in the middle of nowhere, Illinois, pretty quick out there, which is, to me, that's a good, and not the middle of nowhere, Illinois, not there's anything wrong with that, but as the great Seinfeld said, but it's beautiful, it's different, and it's one of those courses where somebody like you who's, scratch plus handicap can get a good challenge, but, if you're willing to take the less aggressive route, somebody who's a 30 handicap can get around there just fine. They can run the ball up on the green on most holes. So I think it's being a closet architecture guy, I love the fact that it can challenge people, or you can take it a little easy and make it easier on yourself and everywhere in between. So
now I'm not going to get too much into your past. We have a great friend of THP, Chris McEwen, who does Golf Origin Stories. I definitely wanted to give him a shout out during this because he's had you on, you've told your story, and it's a fun one to follow. In that you don't actually have that that dad, you actually have other people who drove you into the game, and certainly your history has allowed for that. What really stuck out to me during that was that your first impression was a rather monumental Masters win.
Yeah.
So we're coming up on, well, this has got to be, and I don't want to put a number on this. Do you track it year to year? Do you know how many Masters you've emotionally connected to thus far?
Well, I mean, honestly, in this, what you're referring to is literally the first golf tournament I ever watched. And that doesn't mean maybe flipping around, I hadn't, watched two or three holes, just being, a fan of sports over the years. But the first time I ever tuned into a golf tournament to watch a golf tournament was the 86 Masters. I had just played for my first time in the fall of 85, and, doing some quick math, it's a whole bunch of years, it's 25 plus here for me. And, yeah, that was literally the first thing. Obviously everyone knows who knew who Jack Nicklaus was, but I didn't know he hadn't won in years. I didn't know anything. But and still to this day, that, you know, the first time I went, you know, I'm watching this, I'm getting excited. But when Lundqvist, you know, said maybe, yes, sir. I mean, that even as my little 12, 13 year old, I mean, it sent shivers down my spine when he said that. And it still does. I mean, it is that 86 Masters is obviously iconic for everyone. I get that, right? This isn't like, oh my gosh, I was one of seven people watching it. You know, I realize everybody did, but it literally, I mean, it kicked off. You know, I mean, you could argue a big chunk of my life. It's how I earn my living. It's how my son now earns his living. You know, it that moment was a big thing for me. So yeah, the 86 Masters is special.
And so when it comes to golf tournaments and your yearly schedule, I know you had mentioned you're a little bit limited on time, and especially right now, what golf tournament are you most excited to watch year over year?
The Masters, the U.S. Open and British Open. I mean, it's hard to put any one above the other. I mean, I love the U.S. Open because it's Father's Day. They go to so many iconic courses. You know, I love the Open Championship because it's on Lynx Golf, and I can picture myself over there. I haven't got to play many of those courses, but a few. And so, you know, I always want to picture myself there. And again, the Master holds this special place in my heart. I've been fortunate enough to go to the tournament numerous times as well. Mostly, you know, Monday through Wednesday, not when the tournament actually starts, because I was working, but I was still at, you know, at the course and got to see it and walk it and all those great things. So, you know, it's really hard to separate those three, but I would put the Masters one, but you know, it's really 1A, 1B, 1C. And then, whatever's after that is any courses that I've got to play. I love watching those guys play courses that I've got to play. Even if I've only played the course one time, I just think that's so cool to see where they hit it compared to where I hit it. And they're usually not the same spots, obviously, but still fun.
Well, you have Aviara out there, which is an LPGA stop. And
yeah,
certainly not to say they aren't long in their own right, but a little bit more in our average realm to hit the places they do. And that is such a fun course to experience down there. Aviara, and certainly watching that is a blast. Have you had a chance to play it at all?
I've played Aviara probably, I'm going to guess, six times, four times before I came to Callaway and twice since, both pre-COVID. So it's been, you know, 6 months since I've been over there. But yeah, and I think you described it. It's a really fun golf course.
The only one I didn't like was 18, because it was, as you expect, directly into the wind and mean.
There are some, it's not easy out there. There are some holes out there that are definitely a challenge. But it's a fun golf course. It's every time I've played, it's been in great shape. And, you know, you're talking about public golf, that is a public course, but you'll need a shiny penny to play it. But, you know, again, maybe not one you'd, you know, want to spend every Saturday morning on from a financial standpoint, but very gettable. And, you know, a couple times a year, a really fun place. And again, then you get to see literally the best female players in the world take it on. And that's fun as well.
Yeah. So as much as we don't want to dive too aggressively into the actual industry itself, you are in a very unique role at Callaway. Your involvement with fittings definitely tunes into my ears pretty aggressively, because I am such a big proponent on fitting. Now, obviously, your group Callaway is heavily injected in a good friend of ours, Club Champions locations. But it sounds like what you're doing is looking very forward. Now, I want to know your perspective overall on the importance of a fitting, but I also want to know how much that's changed from we used to always say go get fit, but it seems like in the conditions we're in now, in the world we deal with now, it might not so much be go get fit. It's let's find a way to fit.
Yeah. So, about my position, you know, the official title is Director of Custom Fitting and Player Performance. We don't need to go too much in more than you want, but if you want to get it down to a nutshell, that, you know, it's really big picture fitting and what other things that we can do to help players play better. I mean, if you want to, you know, cut it way down. And I don't think my perspective of fitting has changed much, you know, and it's pretty simple. If you play golf, and if you've played more than a handful of times, then you should get fit, period. you know, there's still the misconceptions out. I'm not good enough. I'm not consistent enough. You know, we still get those. You know, one of the things we're really, you know, working is, you know, we still get some people saying they're intimidated and, you know, I don't know what to say. And, you know, I think that's not a fitting problem. That's a golf problem that we still need to solve. We need to make the sport more welcoming. We need to make it easier for people who are, you know, quote unquote, outside the game trying to get in. We need to make it more friendly for them. And, you know, the great thing about COVID and like that, well, there's nothing great about COVID. Let me start that sentence over. If there's anything good coming out of COVID, again, it's not good, but, you know, it's been golf. I mean, it's really booming. And, you know, looking at data, things like cycling and biking, hiking, RVing, things outdoors, people in a great way coming out of COVID have left their house because they couldn't go inside. They couldn't go to malls. They couldn't go to their jobs. So, you know, we've got a lot of good data saying people are taking up this game coming out of COVID. And, you know, I guess my first plea is all you diehards out there, open your arms to them, open your hearts to them, make them feel welcome. Yeah. They just walked directly in your line when you were on the practice putting green. Yeah, that's awkward and weird. And you don't need to say a darn thing until they do it three times and then figure out how to say it nicely and let them know. Don't scare them away. We want this. And the good news is it's steering minority. It's steering younger. It's steering more women, people we really want in the game. So, and you know, we're getting good data, people coming back. Well, you know, I used to play, I haven't played in 6-7 years, but I'm taking it back up again. So, you know, this is kind of a really long-winded answer, but first and foremost, go get fit no matter who you are. And if you're new to the game, go get fit. And if you're old to the game, go get fit and drag those new to the game people along with you, because it is a great sport. And, you know, a good fitting and a good fitter can help everyone, period. You know, we get those comments, well, I'm not good enough, I'm not consistent enough. First of all, you're probably way more consistent than you think. It's most likely either a delta in path and or face angle, which causes you to hook one and slice the other. But guess what? Those two swings are much more similar than you probably imagine. And again, most of the people here are diehards and know that. But, you know, just because you hook one and slice the next one doesn't mean your swing's not consistent. Yeah, there is an inconsistency in there. But a good fitting will even help to solve some of that. So go get fit, go get fit, go get fit. And gosh darn it, be nice.
Well, our good friend and former Callaway staffer, the late, great Arnold Palmer, always said, swing your swing. And Michael, that's something I believe so aggressively in. I catch a bit of heat. Actually, we did range days for the last couple of years, and a lot of it is video-based. And I think it was more of a joke, but someone was messing around with my chicken wing, and you know, I don't have an overly orthodox swing, even though I think I do a nice job of making it work. But I've never been afraid to swing it, and I think that's something that a lot of folks are very scared of. Is there's the more knowledge you have in your swing, and the more knowledge you have in what makes it operate, the more opportunity you have to find yourself in a product that will promote the best of that. And that's certainly what I've done. And I hope those out there who are afraid of doing it just kind of get over that, because the golf is hard no matter what level you come from. I mean, we watch guys snap putters on tour. You know, we saw poor Danny Lee with a 6-putt a couple weeks ago, and that he's, you know, the best of the best. And it's such a humbling experience. I definitely want people to feel comfortable and at least finding the elements of the game that, or the tools to the game that can best promote their swing.
Yeah. You know, I hate to bring up somebody like Furyk or even John Daly, right? I mean, if you saw those guys at the, you know, I fear many of us have saw those guys at the driving range, would, you know, start to snicker and, hey, look at that Yahoo to your buddy. And, you know, after 5 or 6 swings, you realize they haven't missed the center of the face in 20 years, but that's the thing, right? Swing your swing is so right. What really matters is the moment of impact. And, you know, can then you repeat that? And fitting's going to help with that. Obviously instruction is key, you know, but, just because your swing looks different or, you know, doesn't look like Adam Scott's or Tiger Woods, there's a lot of people who've made a lot of money and won a lot of tournaments whose swing don't look like those two. And yeah, they look beautiful. Yeah, they look perfect and long and everything's great. But man, there's a lot of ways to get back the impact and you know, enjoy the game.
So you're a social media guy, and you just mentioned you just mentioned John Daly. Did you happen to see with a, I'm pretty sure with a cigarette in his mouth and a bare feet, just made a hole in one?
Yeah, which is annoying because that I still am looking for my first. So all these like just, yeah, no big deal, bare feet, you know, have a heater, rifle some 8-iron 170 or whatever he had right in the jar and then act like it's nothing. I'm the point of my golf career. And if you're only listening, I am making air quotes in career because I don't have much of a playing one at all. But I'm at the point now where I might just walk off if I ever make a hole in one. That might be it. Just in the sunset. Throw the clubs, leave them right there and call it a day because I'm begging to get one.
So I also don't have one. And I made the regrettable mistake 15 years ago of telling the golf gods that I wanted my dad to get one before I did. Now, he's obviously my senior by a number of years and he still hasn't had one yet. And I'm starting to regret that because I know that another Verska actually did get a hole in one. And how does that feel?
It was awesome because I was there.
Okay.
And I got to tell the full story now because so we played the back nine first at this course, South Mountain out in Utah, where my son lives. And I've got a family and friends. We actually played the back nine first. My son wasn't with us. And somehow we got talking about hole in, I think it was actually the first par three. We got talking about hole in ones. I was playing with my uncle and my brother, one of my brothers. And my uncle Mark says, hey, when we get to the third or fourth hole, I've actually seen three holes in ones there before. If the pin's up front, it's got a big backboard so you can bounce it, you know, in, or you can actually throw it 15 yards behind the hole and spin it back in. So he tells all that story. So, you know, we get to the round, we get to the little the halfway point, you know, my son joins us for the back nine. He was working at Asher Golf that day and had some things to finish up and joins us for the, what is our back nine, tee off on one, play two, get to the par three. And sure enough, the pin's front. So even from the back tees, we're playing with a front pin. It's, I'm going to guess 145. I don't remember the exact number, but it's Utah altitude. So everything goes forever. And I think he pulled pitching wedge. And so he was half joking, but tells my brother, hey, I'm going to make a hole in one, record this. So gives him his phone. My brother who's getting back into golf and plays, you know, had played once or twice a year, but is starting to play much more often and getting into the game. He's exactly one of the people I was referencing earlier. Presses record, gets the swing, but is the ball's 10 feet off the club face. Steve stops the recording. Oh. The ball hits the green, bounces forward one time, and then spins back off the hill, just as my uncle called it an hour and a half ago. And when I say in the middle of the hole with perfect pace, I mean, you couldn't go up there and roll a ball from 2 feet any better. Falls right in the hole for a hole in one. We all go nuts. My son literally runs, and I'm not joking. Yeah. And I'm sorry if I'm embarrassing you, Michael Three, runs to the green. We're jumping in the carts. We're going up there and just having a grand old time. So it is actually the fifth ace I've got to witness. I got to see one at Cypress Point with the Adams Golf Tour rep, Max Puelli, made one at 15 at Cypress. I've seen a couple other ones, and now I've got to see my son. But I am still 0 for eternity on par three percentage. So if my math's right, that's 0%.
A little healthier way of saying it, just saying ofer.
Yeah.
Ofer, that way you don't have ever to talk about how many.
Yeah. This has been a couple of years, but at one point I honestly don't remember the numbers, but I kind of made some estimations like how many average rounds I played a year, how many, you know, assuming four par threes. And when I got done, I was even more sad than before. So I'm not going to do that math again, but I need one.
So have you smashed pins? Have you damaged holes? Have you lipped out? How close have you been?
So I've been close. I would say legitimately like scary close probably four or five times. And since this is your show and I'm talking and you have to interrupt me, I'm going to tell you my favorite one. So Spyglass is one of my all time favorite golf courses. I absolutely love Spy. I think it's incredible. And so you kind of play the par five, you play the cool par four, you play the downhill par three, you play one of the best par fours in the world, the fourth, and then you turn back towards the forest, which is the par five fifth. And the group behind us, somebody had just made a two. We had walked off the green and somebody rifled a whatever they hit in for a two. They made eagle on four. So we get to five. I'm first up, playing very well, and the caddy goes, hey, this hole's down in a little bowl. This would be a good chance for you guys to get a hole in one. Ha, 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 ha. So I get up there, and it's playing, I'm going to guess, 165 to 170, and pull a 7-iron, and it's, you know, one of those ones, you hit them a lot, I hit them every once in a while. As soon as you hit it, you're like, wow, that's a good shot. I really struck that well. You know, it should come off. So we're watching in the air, and my caddy literally says, go in. Now, again, we can only see like the middle half of the flag up. So all of a sudden we hear it hit the ground and we hear the flag rattle.
Oh.
Now we can't, well, I have no idea what's going on, right? No. So, and I was first to hit, so we have to wait for everybody to hit. And I'm a little surprised that I didn't die of a heart attack, because I mean, my heart was going, I mean, literally whatever the maximum beats before death, that's what I was for 8 minutes. We walked up there and my ball, I had a beautiful ball mark, maybe 8-10 inches right in front of the hole. It clearly had hit the stick and then stopped 4 or 5 inches away. But so, it, you know, obviously it probably hit a little way up. I don't know if it ever touched the hole or anything. I've burned the edge visibly twice where it actually touched it and bent it. And the one at Spy, one because it's Spy, it's one of my all time favorite holes. I mean, all time favorite golf courses, would have been special, but tap in twos or no ones, my friend.
It's incredibly polite of you to let the rest of the people hit before you went up. But I think a lot of golfers, when they hear the pin get rattled, say, I'll be right back.
I was at least polite. I have many flaws, but hopefully that's not one of my fall into too bad. But that was a really fun, you know, it was probably only what, 5-6 minutes, but, you know, felt like an hour of just my heart running out of my chest.
That's awesome. So do you have a full Callaway bag at this point?
13 plus an Odyssey. So absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm playing a Maverick Sub-Zero, which really has helped my driving. I was really struggling driving for a while, and then came to Callaway, and the Epic Flash really helped. The Maverick Sub-Zero has really been a game changer for my driver. Now I can still hit it sideways sometimes, especially like my last round, but in general, it's been a big boost. Just what we can do from a fitting perspective. I happen to be playing a Patterson shaft, which I've really fallen in love with, the Blue Velocity, which, I think some of you guys may have seen on social media and was a prototype. I fear he may release that because it's positive, then I won't be special anymore. But that combination has really worked well for me. I got a full complement 4-through pitching wedge of Apex Pro, playing the KBS Tour 100 shafts in there. That was a great story. I've been had some elbow problems years and years and years ago, and I've been 13 graphite shafts for 10 plus years. I mean, I don't know how long it's been. And so I went, got fit our ECPC, and, you know, I specifically said, hey, I don't want to tell you what I've played before, because I just, you know, I want to go through a real Callaway fitting experience. This is my job. And, you know, I don't want to just tell you what I've been playing. I want you guys to fit me in what you think is best. And it's interesting. I hit the graphite shaft, which is really good, and I still love that I've been playing. The fitter who fit me, you know, said, you know, I really think this one might be a little better for you. And I've really liked that. So I've been playing the KBS, KBS Tour 100s. I guess it's technically TGI 100, or I think that's right. And the irons and down to the wedges. So yeah, full absolutely Callaway bag. And I think that was day 8. So I worked a full week before I actually went and got clubs. I thought that was pretty patient of me. I think, you know, I started up Monday and I waited all the way to the following Wednesday. So that was pretty good.
This is a nice representation that you guys are just the same as we are. I mean, you know, it takes a pretty special person to get into the golf industry and have great success there like you've had. But it is nice to see that you guys are no different than we are. And I mean, from your perspective, it's nice because we see you on social all the time. You've liked a post or two in your day, I'm sure.
I might have the record for most likes. Apparently, yeah. Other people don't like things like I do, but
yeah,
my way of saying thanks for giving me free stuff.
And I'm going to save that for a second because I have a couple questions about your bag setup. Do you think any amateur golfer needs a wedge loft over 58 degrees? And why is the answer no?
Yeah, that's not leading. So I would disagree with that slightly. I do think there's times, and I might even fit in that category. I have a PM grind that's a 60 bent to 59. And I've been using a 58 or 59, but I mean, I'll use it almost exclusively from kind of 45 yards in. I can cover all my distance gaps otherwise. And I'm not a great player. I mean, I'm a single digit handicapper, but I'm not qualifying for Monday qualifying for any tour events anytime soon. But, I do love that versatility around the greens. I love to be able to hit it high. So, I think if amateurs look at, a high lofted wedge and understand what they're going to use it for and how they're going to use it and if it fits in their bag, then I don't have a problem with that, but it really comes down to how you only have 14 clubs to use. I absolutely think everyone should have a driver, full stop, no exceptions. Everybody has to have a putter, full stop, no exceptions. So you got 12 other clubs. How can you get the most versatile, how do you get 12 clubs that will cover all the gaps you need to cover and be the most versatile? So you don't just have another club. Well, I love this off the tee, but I don't really use it anywhere else. Or boy, I love this club, but it's gotta be a perfect lie. Those are the types of things from fitting perspective that I do not like to hear. Let's find those 12 clubs with driver and putter that we can get great gapping and will be very versatile. Not that you want to hit a 4-iron out of deep rough. Obviously not that, but let's find those clubs. So for me, I feel like I can cover those gaps and have that versatility very well with 11 clubs. So I can have a specialty club like my PM grind. Now I do use it on full swings occasionally. But it would need to be a reason because I have to take it straight in the air and land it, because it's right over a bunker and, I just got pressed. And if I don't make a birdie or a par, I lose, all my money, so it's gotta be those special things. But again, from, kind of 45 yards and in, I think my 59 degree wedge is absolutely money, but I've set up the rest of my bag to be able to afford, if you will, to have that luxury of having that specialty club.
Do you have a super hybrid in the bag?
I do not have a super hybrid in the bag, only because even I couldn't get one when we first came on because they were so hot. Now I have had opportunities to put one in the bag since then. I've got an Apex hybrid that I absolutely love that I've turned into a hockey stick because I've bent it too flat and too strong. But to get my ball flight right, to get the gapping right, quite frankly, for me. But I absolutely love that, and the super hybrid is. And hopefully the USGA isn't listening. It is borderline cheating. That thing is crazy long. So
yeah.
And quite frankly, I didn't need it to go that far in my bag. But yeah, if it would have been available when I came on board, I might have 7 of them in my bag because they're so good.
So are you a Chrome Soft guy or Chrome Soft X?
I prefer the X ball. But interestingly, we've been doing some really cool ball fitting stuff that I can't talk about. That's as far as I'm going to go on it. By a pure fitting standpoint, I should probably be playing Chrome Soft, quite frankly. But I don't think there's a detriment to me playing the X ball per se. It's something I need to go back and experiment more with because when I played on the course, I prefer the X ball. But from a fitting standpoint, I'm probably more a Chrome Soft guy. Should be more of a Chrome Soft guy.
So in the 14 months you've been with Callaway, what is the one club that you've hit out of everything else that you've said, like, wow, this is, and not including driver, this is a club that if anyone reached out to you and said, if there's a club I had to try from Callaway, what would it be?
The super hybrid would probably be it. I think the grind on the PM grind from, around the greens is crazy good. Obviously Phil Mickelson was heavily involved in that. Roger Cleveland's heavy involved in that. Those guys, two of the most knowledgeable people who've ever walked the face of the earth on that type of thing. So I think it's not for everybody, admittedly. But I think that's really good. You said I can't say driver, so I won't. but the Maverick fairway, the Maverick 3-wood is scary good. And I know fairway woods get really sticky in people's bags and they're hard to change, but if you need a pretty versatile, 3-wood, I'd recommend the Maverick. But from a pure, like, wow, what just happened? Super hybrids, pretty tough to beat. The Epic Forged irons are.
Are you building my bag for me right now? These are two of my favorite products from Callaway right now.
are again something else. You know, Mickelson's got a few in their bag. They're little rocket ships. So, I mean, that's the cool thing. And, you know, I don't take advantage of it anywhere near as much as I should. But, you know, we have an incredible R&D team, and we make a lot of products. And, you know, if you go to the right fitter and, you know, truly put yourself in their hands, you know, you could do some pretty cool things with that. And, you know, I think that's one of the things to remember is, you know, when you're building your set, it's not just, well, what 8-piece iron set do I need? You know, it can literally be, you know, what eight through pitching wedge iron do I need? And what 4 through 5 through 7 iron do I need? And what does my three club and my 4 club hybrid utility iron, long iron, what does that need to look like? So, you know, I think if more people went in with that, and again, I understand that's harder. I understand that takes more time. I understand all that. But, you know, if you're a diehard and, you know, have a good fitter in your area, those are fun things to mess with. But,
yeah. So there's one more, cause we're quite a ways in, probably have time for one more question. This is something I really want to talk to you about, because you definitely have an invested connection to Twitter. Now, I'm not familiar whether you're on other social elements, but I know you see a lot of what goes on Twitter. And my question to you, Michael, is based on the fact that you are involved in the industry so directly, being a part of Callaway Golf, why do you feel it's so important to stay connected to a place like Twitter? And what does that do for you from a day-to-day basis?
So, yeah, I am on Facebook. I am on Instagram. I check both of those, you know, a couple times a week, mainly because family and friends are on there. I have family and friends on Twitter, but Twitter, I do actually view as part of my job, quite frankly, because it, you know, you can get a pulse on things. You can understand what other people are saying about products, both good and bad. And the thing I like about Twitter, it's so short, right? You only've got, I guess now 220 characters or whatever it is, but you know, you can get the gist of things quickly. You can understand trends quickly. You can search for things and keywords in a manner where, you know, how does this factor in? I just heard this about this product. Or I just heard this about this ball. What are people saying out there? And it's essentially free form out there that people can go on and, you know, maybe some fear, there's might be some fear of the woke golf mob out there coming back on some things. But other than that, it's a pretty safe space for you to go out and, you know, say whatever you want to say. So, you know, as long as you like leather, you know, $1,700 leather, tiny little leather golf bags, you're in good shape. But I do like it for that, because people can go on there and say what they want, good, bad, or indifferent about a product, you know, and you know, I always, and I still believe in this, people vote with their wallet, right? I mean, you know, so don't get a politics on here, but people vote every day with their wallet. That includes golf. You know, if you buy a club and don't like it, you're going to tell your buddies to not vote the same way with your wallet. Well, now they can tell their buddies not to vote the same way with their wallet and go on Twitter and complain about it. Hey, I bought this and I don't like it, and here's why. So, you know, there's good feedback there. Now, obviously there's some garbage on there, and people probably haven't seen it, but there is. But I do like it for that feedback. And, you know, I legitimately mean this. I've made friends on Twitter, people who have later gone on to meet at PGA shows or, you know, meet up at even golf events and things like that. So I'm not saying that people should go meet randos that they found on Twitter. I'm not saying that, but there are lots of good people in the golf community, and golf Twitter is very active, and I mean it. I really enjoy it.
Well, we are incredibly grateful that you spend that extra time exposing yourself to, at least from a Twitter basis, to those who do follow the game in a much deeper level. Pretty much wrapping up here. Is there anything you want to say to the THB community? Anything you want to throw out there as kind of a final word?
First, I mean, I love being part of the THP community. I mean, Josh and I became kind of instant friends. I don't remember when it was, but it was a while ago. Sadly, we're both getting older. I guess that's not too sad, but at the rate at which I feel I'm getting older is sad. You know, Josh and I just kind of hit it off. We've become great friends. And obviously, you know, now you on board and Adam on board with Golf Unfiltered, and so many of the people on the forum who, you know, at different golf companies I've got to be associated with and meet. So, you know, I really do feel like THP is, you know, part of my golf family. But again, I guess it comes back to what we talked about earlier. First of all, go get fit, encourage others to get fit, including your spouse, your son, who's only played five times. That's okay. If they're hitting clubs, they should get some idea of getting fit. And this is true in Twitter and in life. Be kind. Go out of your way to be nice to people, especially those new and returning golfers that we all want to be part of our community. And quite frankly, the industry really needs. There's my soapbox ending for you if you want it.
It's nice and circular. Be kind, be humble. Michael, we always do appreciate you, and I look forward to hopefully doing this again with you soon. So as you mentioned, we do have another wonderful podcast on the THP Radio Network that is At Golf Unfiltered, a weekly podcast from Adam over there with incredible insights throughout the industry. Even though I disagree with just about everything he says, especially on Twitter, and I am incredibly grateful that Michael likes every single one of my retorts to him. So make sure to go ahead and follow Michael at VGolfman on Twitter. We have obviously our socials already out there at Canada and Golf and at Off Course THP. Michael, once again, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.